This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we have got on an amazing rapper, a very vocal socio-political commentator. He's been on my album, Word of Zuby. We did a song together called Hallelujah. He's been on the podcast before. And this is, of course, the one and only Bryson Gray. Welcome to the show, bro.
Thank you so much for having me on, bro.
No doubt, man. Always a pleasure. So I've done a brief intro there, but for people who are not familiar with who you are and what you do, tell them a little bit about yourself, bro.
I mean, long story short, I'm a Christian conservative, heavy on a Christian first. And when I say Christian nowadays, I got to be more specific. I'm a biblical Christian. Unfortunately, you have to be more specific about that now. And I make music. I've been making music ever since I've known life. Ever since I've been aware of my own existence, I've made music. And I just so happen to start making music about what I believe in as far as my biblical faith and my political belief system. And here we are. I'm a very controversial guy, but I've always been that way. So
I hear that. So in terms of the music you used to make, it used to be a lot more secular. It used to be very different to the type of stuff that you make now. So tell me a little bit about how you went through this change and why.
Yeah, I wish that story was more interesting than the one I'm about to say, but it isn't. In reality, bro, I've always been a Bible thumper, like always. Okay. I was just lukewarm at first. So I was still making secular music about women shaking their butts in clubs. I had songs on the radio. I was performing in these clubs. I actually headlined a concert with J. Cole at Winston-Salem State University Homecoming in, 2012 or something like that? I don't remember when it was. Because my rap group called 336 Boys, we were real popular where I'm from. But I've always been, a person with a set of morals that I don't break. And as far as Christianity, the more you read the Bible consistently, I feel like it makes you want to change because you feel convicted about yourself. You know what I'm saying? I would Bible dump on Twitter when it was fun and in the early, I'm sure you were on Twitter when it first started too. And I was there and you know what I'm saying? I would Bible dump on there and then I would go take 20 shots of vodka. You know what I'm saying? not every night, but on weekends when I'm partying with my friends, I'll be like extra lit. You feel me? But I have Bible dump earlier that day, but I was always so vocal that my friends would be like, how can you judge this, but you be doing this? And you can't lie because I was just with you doing it. You know what I'm saying? And, I don't like being a hypocrite. So you start reading the Bible more and it starts changing your life. And even as my music progressed, if you go listen to one of my last secular albums I made under my old name, I was talking about God. I was talking about how I was celibate, getting closer to God. And but I was cursing in the song. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, even in my music, secular music, you could hear the progress, and now we're here.
I hear that, man. What's it like being, no, this isn't the right question. Here's a better question. Do you think that being a Bible believing Christian in the modern day era in the USA or perhaps throughout the West essentially makes one a quote unquote extremist? Because I was just thinking yesterday, I don't know what spurred this thought. I was thinking, what would happen if Jesus not just came back, but if he came back and was like on Twitter and was vocal and stuff? And I was like, I think he'd get banned. Easy. I was like, I think he'd get banned. I think he'd be labeled an extremist. And I think he'd be labeled with the whole dangerous figure. I mean, he'd be either literally or metaphorically crucified again.
Oh, bro, he would be literally on the list of the ADL. And I don't even think Elon would let Jesus back on Twitter. Listen, I read the Bible a lot, and this make-believe Jesus that people try to act like is in the Bible, he ain't there. The real Jesus of the Bible is very blunt and very vocal. And it's why they got him in the first place. And yeah, if he was back, bro, he'll be one of the most persecuted. He'll be banned from countries. I mean, I know that because a lot of Bible believing people, I've watched them get banned from countries. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So and then you gotta think about it, bro. The way we view morality is a little different than how they view morality in biblical times. The punishments were a little different, even when Jesus, during his reign, during him like telling people what was going on, the punishments were a little different back then. So just imagine him calling for some of them punishments. Listen, man, the Jesus of the Bible, I mean, listen, persecution come with it. You literally get bad. A lot of people think, let me tell you something, bro. My merch company I'm with, right? I have the same merch company as the Hodge Twins.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Patrick and a few other ones. And I remember I had to meet with them because Facebook had blocked me from doing ads. And that's the merch, that's their bread and butter.
Yeah.
So I had to meet with them because they talked to Facebook. This like the company I work with, they're like a, I don't know if you know who I'm talking about, they're like a top company. Like they got direct connection with Facebook.
Mm.
And I had a meeting with them because they have had issues with Facebook before with Hodge Twins and Joe Patrick's, but they were always able to get everything situated. With me, they couldn't. And I had to meet with them. And since I'm less popular than Hodge Twins and Joe Patrick, it was real crazy. They said it's not my political stuff. They said it's the religious stuff that's pretty much the line. Like I crossed the line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I'm saying? And it just shows you that being a conservative or having a conservative belief system, that can get you banned, but that's not the true people that they don't want on their platform. It's really Christians, Bible-believing Christians, who are really not allowed to spew their beliefs. The only reason conservatives get in a crossfire because a lot of conservative beliefs, people don't even understand how closely related they are to biblical beliefs. Mm-hmm. And it's a very interesting thing, man.
What do you think has played out over the past few decades? Because something that surprises me in the West, of course, I'm from the UK, but I spend more time in the US than I do in the UK now. I was in Australia recently, but I travel a lot. I've been to a lot of different countries, spend a lot of time in the Middle East. That's where I grew up. And something that's struck me is just in our own relatively short lifetimes, how much society and culture and as a result of that, politics has shifted. I mean, if you were to just go back a couple decades ago in the same countries, I'm not talking about in the Middle East, I'm talking about in the USA, in the UK, in Europe, and so on, when things were just more, if you want to use the term, conservative, I don't think that much of what you say or believe would be classified as remotely radical or far right or extreme or intolerable. In fact, a lot of the stuff that you question and a lot of the stuff that we combat, in fact, especially with some of the ideology that's being pushed out there and some of the ideas, that's the stuff that would have been considered radical and far beyond the pale and completely outside the Overton window. So it seems like in a matter of a couple decades, you've managed to shift the Overton window to such a stage that if somebody just stays still, and even a lot of liberal people have said this, by the way, people who are what I call sane liberals, right, who aren't super woke progressives, they've just stood still and then everything else shifts and they're finding themselves more aligned with conservatives now. How do you think that's played out?
I've watched it. Bro, I was, my dad found my old files of my music I made in high school. And I found it interesting, right? Like the rap group I was in, how many times we dropped the British cigarette bomb in them songs.
Yeah, yeah.
And how normal it was. It wasn't even taboo. And then it made me sit here and think, bro, the stuff I'm saying now, I've always said it and it wasn't taboo. Matter of fact, this was mainstream. Like me, the things people call me radical for now was literally mainstream. You said a couple of decades, bro. I'm talking about 10, 11, 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I used to write blogs. I was talking to somebody about this earlier. I remember when the LGBT first started boycotting Chick-fil-A. I watched it with my own two eyes. And the reason why is because one of the presidents of Chick-fil-A, they asked him for his opinion on same-sex marriage, and he said he opposed it. Mm-hmm. And that was enough for him to boycott. It wasn't about he didn't decline to serve a gay person or anything like mm-hmm. that. He just disagreed with same-sex marriage, which is honestly the common thing amongst Christians. And they boycotted him. I remember this while too. I used to write blogs about it. When I was lukewarm, I'd be like, listen, I need to do better at following God, but this is clearly against the Bible. How are y'all boycotting somebody for simply having a different opinion, but y'all are saying they're the ones that's intolerant, that is mm-hmm. oxymoronic in nature. And even I was predicting things in the blog post, but even I couldn't predict what we're watching today. I promise you, like, if you would ask me to guess 100 different things of what would have happened, I would not have guessed it would have went this far. And I was radical then too. Mm-hmm. So to watch it play out, bro, it's kind of scary of that shift. And I wonder if this, you know, you traveled to more places than me. So I wonder if this shift has happened in the Middle East. Like, is it the same sharp shift? Because I don't think so.
Well, you're kind of seeing that play out right now because we got the World Cup going on in Qatar. And that has put that country in particular, but I guess as a result, much of the Gulf and Middle East region, it's put it in the spotlight. And you're seeing this, to me, very interesting clash between modern Western, I'd say progressive ideology, and conservative Islamic beliefs and culture. And this is a very, to me, my whole lifetime, this has been an obvious clash, because one thing I have never understood about the sort of woke leftist types is that they have this sort of affinity with, they don't like Christianity, clearly, for the most part, but they've kind of got this warm, paternalistic relationship. I wouldn't even say with Islam, but I'd say with Muslims, maybe because they're brown and they don't consider that the sort of white man religion. I think that's really largely what it comes down to. But if you're talking about Christianity and Christians, and you're talking about Islam and Muslims, and then you're talking about homosexuality and tolerance of LGBTQ+, whatever the acronym is now, beliefs and ideologies, and you're talking about which one is less accommodating and tolerant, then you're getting a clash here. We saw this play out in the UK, actually. I don't know if you're aware, about 2 or 3 years ago, in the Midlands in the UK, in some of the middle counties, areas around Birmingham, Dudley, Bradford, those sort of areas in the middle of the country, there's a very significant Muslim population, perhaps up over 50% in certain areas of those cities. Yeah. And in some of the schools, they were pushing the LGBT stuff on the kids. And the majority of kids at these schools are from Muslim families. So of course, boom, the clash, right? This led to this clash. And it was kind of funny watching from the outside, because you could see these lefties, these progressives, didn't know how to thread this needle, because they want to be pro-Muslim and pro-LGBT. And they're kind of looking at this battle happening like, oh my gosh, do we side with these angry Muslim parents, or do we side with the teachers who want to push this stuff on their kids? And overall, the Muslims won. And they stopped teaching that stuff in the schools. But it was interesting seeing that play out in the UK, especially because in the UK, people are, again, people more on the left especially, are very keen to, you know, they're very pro-immigration, right? They want to bring in people from all these different countries and so on. And I'm looking at it as someone who grew up in the Middle East thinking, this is going to lead to a clash, right? Like, these are not people who share a lot of your same values in many cases. And at some point, this is going to come to a head. It's like oil and water, right? Like, I'm like, these things just, they just don't mix. But I think it's really interesting what we're seeing right now happening in Qatar, because you're having people in the West, whether in the USA, in the UK, want to, I would argue, try to force acceptance of certain ideas in a place where they know that those things aren't accepted. And people don't just want to be, what's the thing? It's like, it's not just about, as you've alluded to, you could argue early on, decades ago, it was about tolerance / acceptance. Whereas now you're seeing this push from some elements of it for dominance and suppression. And, you know, there's no tolerance here, right? They don't care about accommodating what you believe or your religion or whatever. They're just like, no, this is what I want. And people are saying, oh, well, this is about human rights. I'm like, look, Qatar is not saying that people are not allowed, like X group of people are not allowed to come and watch the game. They're just saying, hey, if you're going to come here, you know, if you want to walk in waving a massive pride flag or wearing a super gay t-shirt or something, they might not want you to come into the stadium, or they might have something to say about it.
I said this on Twitter. I respect it because I'm not shocked, because I'm sort of like, last time me and you was with each other actually about the Middle East, because I sort of like watch how they handle certain situations also. And I'm not shocked, but I am shocked that it got so big, because first off, I'm surprised that the World Cup was held in such a place. this is an obvious, like, you know what I'm saying, thing that's going to happen. Money but outside talks. Of that, the fact they stood on it publicly, and then I saw some people out there, they called themselves Qataris or something like that.
That's the name of the nationality.
Yeah. And I watched them say, like, I watched somebody on Twitter say, this is not the West. Everybody's values is not Western values, and y'all are not going to shove it down our throats. And I can respect that. But it seems like Muslims are not afraid to do that. Even here, they have like stopped schools from pushing LGBT in certain areas in the United States of America. And I find it interesting that in a country that claims to be 69% Christian, I don't see that energy amongst Christians. So I respect Qatar. I respect a lot of Middle Eastern countries, even though I heard some are actually starting to adopt more Western ideals. But from what I'm saying, I can respect it.
I hear that. Here's a question, bro. As someone who's a strong and staunch conservative, what do you think is the proper balance between liberal and conservative values?
So I don't think there is a balance. And the reason I say that, the simplest definition for liberal in politics, at least, is, I'm going to put it in the most non-biased way possible. It's the willingness to accept new ideas. The most basic definition of conservative is the opposite, is to conserve traditions that you already have. So at some point, inevitably, those two ideals will crash. Will clash, because they have no choice, even definitionally. Now, the issue we have is liberal, is the idea of accepting new ideas always bad? And, of course, it'd be a lie if we said it was. I mean, even in the case, I'm going to be honest, I'm more of a, I mean, I can't call myself a theocrat, because that would mean I'm the leader of the others. But I'm not necessarily 100% against theocracies. And so if I had a Bryson Gray country, you know, it would be no drug dealers at all. Trust me. We will have that settled. The United States isn't a theocracy. I've never smoked weed in my life. I can't stand the smell of marijuana. I don't like being around people that are high. But isn't it hypocritical that you can do almost every other type of drug legally, but you can't, you know, do marijuana? Mm-hmm. Now, that's the issue. It's like that's necessarily liberal to say we should be legalized, right? It's sort of a liberal idea. Mm-hmm. But is it a logical one based on the country we're in? So that's like all liberal ideas aren't terrible. But I think from societies across the world, I can see that conservative ideals are simply better. But it's hard to say a balance, because at some point liberalism and conservatism has to clash. It just has to. Mm.
I would certainly, I get what you're saying. I mean, in terms of the clash, I would almost say it's more between conservatism and progressivism. Because to me, progressivism is always wanting to hit the accelerator, right? So, I mean, if you're driving in a car, I mean, is it better to accelerate or brake? It's like, well, it depends, right? It depends on what's happening. It depends on what's in front of you, where you're facing, and so on, right? If you've got massive problems and a ton of bad ideas in a society and stuff is not functioning well or is genuinely massively oppressing people, right? Conserving that, there's not much wisdom in conserving that, right? Conserving what's going on in North Korea is not virtuous, right? You do want some change there, right?
Well, it depends on the words depend on the country, though. But go ahead.
That's what I mean. It's relative. Yeah. But my problem with progressivism per se is that the idea is that always keep changing, right? There's no limiting principle. Keep going, just keep hitting the accelerator. And it's like, well, that's stupid, because sometimes you get things to the correct level and the correct balance or equilibrium, and continuing to change it, you're just gonna break something, and you're gonna get rid of a lot of the good old ideas. Progressivism thinks that old ideas are inherent, basically bad.
That's right? Liberalism, that's extreme liberalism. Perhaps
by the American definition, maybe this is where there's the. To me, liberalism is true liberalism, and I do think the word gets misused a lot, particularly in the States. Is about largely about individual rights. I mean, freedom of speech itself is a classically liberal concept, and I know you're a big advocate for freedom of speech. I mean, liberalism is rooted in the word liberty, right? Freedom.
Yeah. But
I think liberalism and progressivism often get conflated. I think progressives are the people who just keep changing, keep moving, right? They're never satisfied. You could get the most, you've reached all the freedom anyone could ever want, and they still want to keep pushing and keep changing.
There's multiple definitions of liberal, which is why I say if you look up the idea under the scope of politics, it literally means the willingness to accept new ideas, and that's one of the set definitions for liberal. And what you just explained with a progressive, they just keep accepting new ideas, like it's just a continuous thing. Liberalism, of course, in the definition that I'm using right now, is who says which idea is enough? Because you're going to have somebody more liberal than the last person. Some liberals might be like, okay, we accepted these ideas. Now these are good. Let's stop, right? Because now you're trying to conserve the new ideas. Mm-hmm. But at the same token, a progressive is just an extreme liberal. No, you got to keep going. We got to keep accepting new stuff. That's why I said at some point, under the definition you're speaking about like liberties and things of that nature, I do agree. But at the same token, that's why I said the country matters. Because what a conservative, like a conservative in the UK would be sort of different than a conservative in the United States.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because it's based on the history of that specific country. And here, I think the clash comes because if we like it or not, the founders weren't deists. That's actually a new idea. Every founder viewed themselves as a Christian. In their own writings, every single one viewed themselves as a Christian. They had different theologies, different aspects about Jesus' divinity, but they all viewed themselves as Christians. So I think the issue is this country was created by Christians. That's what the American Revolution was, in part a religious war, along with taxes. They just don't teach us that at school because they wanted to be able. Matter of fact, look at the beginning of this country. A lot of states acted as theocracies, and it kept going even in the late 1800s, even in Mormonism. Look how many countries Joseph Smith got kicked out of because he was trying to pose something different on people. They was like, nope, you're out of there. Look at the Puritans. Look how many people got kicked out of certain states simply because there was a different religion. And I think I think that's the clash. The clash is simply everybody's becoming more secular, which is a part of accepting new ideas and being the willingness to get rid of traditional ones, but the country isn't based on secularism in any way, shape, or form. So I think that's sort of where the clash is, and I don't think it's an avoidable clash, which is why it's hard for me to see a balance per se.
I hear that. So when you say that, you're mostly referring to the U.S. So
yes,
I think
US.
Yeah. So I think perhaps the answer would be if you could rewind back perhaps a couple decades, then that would have been the right balance, right? Because I assume you wouldn't want to go back to 1922 and be like, okay, cool, like everything's how it should be, right? But there's point that would be reached perhaps in the 90s, I don't know, the 2000s, where it's like, okay, cool, we've got the equilibrium. Now let's conserve this. Is that fair?
I don't even think it's the 90s. I'm trying to think. Because even when you look at things like the Civil Rights Movement, right? You know, people go back to that Barry Goldwater. You know, a lot of people hate Barry Goldwater. They think he's racist. But in reality, he wasn't. In reality, Lyndon B. Johnson actually rejected the first two proposed Civil Rights Acts. And Barry Goldwater supported them. And then they added something unconstitutional in it that Barry Goldwater thought was unconstitutional. And that's the one that was actually passed. Like, even then, it's like, I don't know. It's a very thin line to think about. Because when you look at statistics, numbers, when were people better off? When was this? When was this? When was this? It'll lead you to a couple different conclusions. But I do think somewhere in that time frame you're speaking about, in my opinion, is a decent balance.
Yeah. I think it's complicated because I think a lot of people have the idea that human beings and human societies continually get better. And I don't think that's largely true overall on a long-term perspective. But I think that we're continually progressing and regressing. Right. I think that we're moving forward in some ways, but then in other ways, like clearly certain things are getting worse. I mean, you can pull up statistics and say, okay, let's look at marriage and family. Let's look at marriage and family and the world, the situation children are coming into and growing up in. Let's look at divorce rates, marriage rates, so on. Let's even look at birth rates. Right. And on all those fronts, it's like, okay, that's getting worse. Right. Getting worse. You've got more and more kids growing up without their father around, more kids growing up in high, you know, divorce rates going up, slightly coming down recently, but generally going trending upwards over the decades. More and more people just, you know, dropping out of marriage, more and more marriage, all that stuff, the whole family structure, that's clearly declined. But then you look at other aspects, if you look at life expectancy and medicine and the I would say genuine tolerance and fairness and equality under the law and the way that people are generally treated, as in, you know, don't need to go that far back to people being segregation days in certain places, people being brutalized and attacked based off immutable characteristics, so on and so forth. Go back a little bit further, we're back to slavery days. So I think that humans have definitely, our societies have definitely advanced and progressed in some ways. But then with some of those bad ideas that are getting pushed and some of the new ones, you can look at them and you can see how they're even affecting young people and be like, okay, wait, we've overcorrected here. And you're now getting to a point where in the name of progress, you're regressing again.
Yeah.
What do you think?
How can I say this? This is going to be very controversial.
Go ahead, bro. Go ahead.
But a lot of things I don't think we've progressed in. I think it still goes on more so. Now, we as humans, we look at things sort of at face value. So we look at slavery and be like, okay, that's the worst. You know, that's bottom tier. But I think it's worse now. Because when you look at, we're just talking about segregation, right? Even forced segregation. A lot of Black communities were faring better. Our families were more intact, and statistically, we were faring a lot better when we were forced to do something. Versus now, I feel like they sort of brainwashed us into being mental slaves. Now, there's an argument. Now the debate is, what's worse, being physically a slave or mentally a slave? And I would actually say mental, because then you become self-destructive. We've gotten all of that, right? We got all the equality. Black people got all the equality you can ever dream of, right? Matter of fact, in some cases, it's like, we actually get a little leg up in this country. What do we do? What have we done with it? Our two generations ago, matter of fact, my grandparents and my grandma was still alive, watched Louis Farrakhan. She wow. But even she look at the crap we do now and be like, what the crap are y'all doing?
Yeah.
Like, what are y'all, what is going on? What is this?
Yeah.
They're confused with all the freedom we got.
With that said, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but would it not be, would you literally be saying that things are not better compared to, like, let's not even talk segregation. Let's talk actual chattel transatlantic slavery days. I mean, surely, surely things are better now than then. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
yeah,
would you, I was not, saying, would you not, I'm not trying to put you in any type of Kanye slavery was a choice kind of trap.
Me and Kanye a little different. I stand on everything I say. In some ways, yes, because we were literal slaves. Even though it's deeper than that, we were slaves on multiple continents, and Africans pretty much sold us into it. So, you know, that's that. But we were literal slaves, right? We had no freedom. We were physical slaves. And of course, at face value, we say it's much better. But more so, I'm talking about fresh out of slavery. I'm talking about the few years after slavery. Go look at the single motherhood rates 15 years, 10 years after slavery. It's going to be hard to find some statistics, but it's easy to find some state statistics in the South well after that. Our single motherhood rates was low. Our families were intact. Even when you go to the let's look at post-segregation. If I'm not mistaken, in the 90s, I think was it Manhattan? It was some city in Brooklyn. The black median household incomes actually did surpass whites in a few of those areas. But it was because of immigrants. So I guess it'd be unfair to use that statistic. you know, I got to keep it 100 with you. But when you look at fresh out of slavery, I'm talking about during... Let's take out slavery, right? Let's use segregation.
Okay.
In the peak segregation, Jim Crow laws, everything you need to know. Our families were faring better under actual oppression. And all I'm saying is when you look at us now, we don't have that. We're faring worse, but I think we're still mental slaves.
When you say we, are you referring to Black Americans as an overall demographic? Okay.
As an overall, I'm not talking about me myself personally. Yeah, but yeah. I am a Black American, so I gotta, you know what I'm saying? The majority of us, I think it's mental slavery. And when you view things that way, now it's about which one is worse. And most people are gonna say, well, physical slavery is worse because it, you know, it's literal physical slavery. Pulls on the heartstrings, pulls on the muscle strings, and it's all bad. I'm not saying one is good and one is bad. I was making a comparison about which one is worse. With this one, mental slavery, I feel like we're more self-destructive. We're putting ourselves in bondage. We're actually choosing bondage at this point. And it's because of brainwashing. They're getting us to choose slavery. To me, that's some of the wildest things you can do. Get somebody to choose it. Ooh-wee, I don't know, man. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying slavery was good. I'm not saying go back to slavery. I'm just saying we're in mental slavery right now. I think it's just as bad, just in a different way.
When you say mental slavery, what specifically do you mean by that? I have an allusion to what you mean, but what do you mean by that?
Well, most people think I'm just talking about politically, right? Voting Democrat. I'm really not. We didn't really start overwhelmingly, you know what I'm saying, for the fact checkers, overwhelmingly vote Democrat until after the Lyndon B. Johnson and Barry Goldwater things. But when I say mental slavery, I'm talking about, think about when they introduced full-scale welfare. It was literally promoted to the Black community. Not the Black community only, but it was a heavy push, just like Planned Parenthood now. It was a heavy push for it in the Black community. If you read what it is, I mean, I got family members that went through it. My dad went through it. When you look at what it is, right, you literally have to choose the government or a family. Literally. And if they package it real good for you, they tell you it'll help you if you're struggling and things of that nature. You cannot have a male. If you get caught with a male figure in that house, you will get taken off government assistance so quick. My aunt, she's just younger than me. Sorry, refer to her as my cousin. My aunt got kicked out of Section 8 for this reason. Got caught. You get kicked out of it for even thinking you're about to have a family. How is that not slavery? They're incentivizing you to not get married and not have a family, not have a father figure in the home. How is that not a more intelligent way of slavery?
Okay, here's a question. Is that an actual example of systemic or institutional racism?
Is it racism? I mean, you can, I don't mind people calling it that, but my issue is it's not being forced like physical slavery. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to choose it.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
But if those things are being explicitly pushed, as I think you believe they are or were,
oh, yeah,
on targeted towards the Black community, knowing they're going to have this detrimental effect over the next several decades, perhaps even centuries, could that perhaps be an actual, I know the term systemic and institutional racism have been taken over by the lefties to mean anything and everything they dislike. Mm-hmm. But if that's the truth, wouldn't that be a potential genuine instance of it?
Well, my issue with is not even the connotation of left piss on it, right? Mm. The reason I have an issue saying is that is just simply because it's not forced. It is pushed. I think it's more sinister than what people would call institutional racism or systemic racism. I think it's more sinister than that. And because you don't have to continue really doing it. All you have to do is convince one generation of something and the rest will follow, because those are going to be the people raising the kids. And they're going to tell their kids this is the right way to do it. And I know, but is it systematic racism? The reason I'm still saying no, because it's not like it's only Black people doing it, and it's not like it's forced upon you. You are coerced, sort of, into doing it.
Does it?
I mean, I guess.
Does it have to be forced, though? Does it have to be forced? What I mean, if it's deliberately? Well, let's assume that they genuinely knew that it was going to have this malicious, negative outcome on millions of people, primarily of a specific demographic. Mm-hmm. Then I myself also have an aversion to these terms. I'm doing this as an intellectual high IQ conversation.
Yeah.
But if I were to think of something that could potentially accurately be described by those terms, that's the kind of thing that I would be thinking. I'd be thinking intentionally disrupting and to some extent dismantling that those families, knowing that economically, in terms of crime, in terms of education, in terms of behavior, culture, and all of that, right? All the impacts you're going to get from that, knowing how far behind that's going to set a group of people. And then also you're putting in, yes, you know, no one is, you know, people are not being forced to abort their children, but you're deliberately putting these abortion facilities in specific communities, right? You're not finding them in the suburbs where the white people are living in, but you're deliberately saying, okay, let's put them here, let's put them there. And you're putting it under this veneer of, oh, this is about women's empowerment or freedom and, you know, caring about you and so on. I would say that that's, it's certainly insidious.
If that's the intention. It is insidious, but let me be clear. I believe not allowing Black people to vote, Black man specifically, not allowing Black people to vote is systematic racism. Okay. I believe forced segregation, not allowing Black people in public schools. I feel like that's factually systemic racism. The issue I have with this specific thing is because that stuff right there is more. I mean, let's agree on what racism is. Racism is just discrimination based upon race.
Sure.
Are we agreeing with that?
On a basic level, I'd also add it could be the belief that one race is or ethnicity is inherently superior or inferior. Yeah.
Now, see, at that point, it's like, does this specifically, because I feel like the other two examples I just gave, which I believe to be systemic racism, I feel like those two fit the example perfectly. Mm-hmm. Now, is basically, I will even go as far as to use the word coerce. Is coercing a group of people to do something, does that fit that specifically? Because I'm not against it being called that. If somebody call it that, I'm not going to be like, no, let's not call it that. I just don't know if I would go as far as to saying it's systemic racism. I mean, I understand the argument.
Okay. However, and this is the interesting part. It would certainly fit the definition that the people who tend to use these terms actually define it as, right? Because they would argue, I mean, if you go to the Ibram X. Kendi and, you know, Robin DiAngeli's schools of thoughts, and they're saying that if something very disproportionately has a negative impact on a demographic, even if it's not explicitly targeted at them, right? If you've got an 80 or 90% Black neighborhood and you're putting in certain policies and facilities there that are gonna, or pushing certain ideas that are gonna detrimentally affect them, And, you know, you could be like, oh, well, it's not everyone there is black, so it's not directly targeted at those people. But it sort of is, because the people who push these narratives would say, even if you get a disparity in the outcome, then, oh, that's systemic racism, which I would say is nonsense.
Yeah.
But I would say at some point, if it's like, okay, well, 80% of that community is X, and you're pushing this and this and this, and you're coercing that and that, then while it might not be explicitly, this is a law that is targeting that group of people, it's still kind of, it's certainly gray.
Yeah, but see, I would disagree with that extension of the definition personally.
Okay.
Because then at that point, you can apply that to, like, as you were talking, I was thinking about how many things you can apply it to.
Yes. And by the way, I largely agree with you. I'm just saying, I'm thinking that, so, because what's interesting to me is when I have this conversation with some more progressive types, right? The type of people who think that right now, you know, systemic, institutional, structural racism are massive problems. They often won't give the example of what we're talking about, right? They won't talk about these welfare policies. Mm-hmm. They won't talk about Planned Parenthood and the way it was targeted in certain, they won't talk about the whole dismantling and of the Black American family, which I, as a non-American, as an outsider, if I were to think of like, okay, like what's been a big atom bomb dropped on that particular community, I would say it's that. I'm not going to say it's modern day policing or some of these other things that people like to jump to. I'd be like, well, let's go back like 60, 50 years ago and see what happened there.
Yeah, because full scale welfare, I mean, everything is like a gradual thing. Even feminism, it was funded, but you know, we ain't got to go back that far, but we can. But if we look at full scale welfare, it attacks the family. It's incentivizing certain things. And people like free stuff, bro. People love them some free stuff. And it's, you know what I'm saying? I do think it's sinister. I do think it's insidious, as you said. I just don't know about calling it that. But then when you go down, once you do that, even if you go read Karl Marx, go read any of these communists, they always knew you had to break down a family. And a part that a lot of people don't talk about is all of them knew you had to get people to stop believing in God. But it's a different conversation if anybody go read a Karl Marx book. And there was a movie that talked about this too. I forgot what it's called. It was a popular movie on Rumble. I was looking at that, brought it up also, and I was hype about it. I forgot. But yeah, I mean, if we want to call it, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if it could fit that bill, bro.
Sure.
Like me personally, I just don't know if I would make it fit that. But I wouldn't be mad if somebody else said it.
I hear that. Man, how do people who are concerned about this stuff that we're discussing and much more of it, how do we right the ship? I think that's something that a lot of people are wondering. Here's something I've definitely noticed on my travel, or even just with all the online stuff, is a lot of people, whether I'm in the UK, I'm in the US, I'm in Australia, people are like, man, you know, I'm agreeing with so much stuff you're saying. I'm worried about this. I've got a kid in school and they're teaching them this, or this is being pushed and that's being pushed. And people don't know what to do, right? People are noticing it. People are concerned. People are afraid, but they don't really know what to do. They feel like the culture is just moving and they're kind of powerless. What do you think is the way forward?
I don't believe that. I believe people know deep down what to do. Because it's not what to do is not complicated. It's difficult because how do you get it done on a large scale? But it's not complicated on what to do. I feel like people are lazy and people are fearful. People aren't bold. Because if you possess those three things, the problem is simple, right? Even from the most basic problem, speaking up. Mm-hmm. I've watched people do it. I mean, we just talked about what Muslims did. And I think you said some cities in the UK. And it has happened multiple times here where schools wanted to push something and the majority of people in them schools were Muslim kids. Muslims came and shut it down, went and shut it down. It's the most simplest thing ever, right? But most people, especially Christians, are punks. They're scared. Either they're scared or they were told that you have to be tolerant, or they were told that, oh, don't judge. Jesus wouldn't judge and yada, yada, yada. All this like modern Christianity crap, and it's making you content, or it's making you not speak out because you don't even think, some people don't even think it's the right thing to do. And all of that is all that are they are falsehoods, but it's making you slow. Now, another thing, and this is the hard part, but it isn't so hard. Take your kids out of schools. It's not as expensive as you think. You may have to. I'm not going to lie. You know, if you got two cars, that two cars might have to turn into one. If you got a 2,500, 3,000 square foot house, that might have to turn into 1,600, 1,700. I know these things are difficult. But what are you willing? The thing is, everything in life is a trade-off. That's simple economics, right? Even working an eight-hour job, what you're doing is you're trading off that 8 hours you could be spending doing something else for a job, and in turn, you get money to do what you want to do with it. Everything in life is a basic trade-off, even in relationships, right? You get a girlfriend, you get a wife, you trade that for maybe some of the freedoms you have. You can do whatever you want. Everything in life is a trade-off. Mm-hmm. So if you think we are going to get what we want without trading off something, without sacrificing, we already lost. That's impossible, right? So what to do is easy. And that's why I think a lot of people on the right have started adopting this messiah complex, where they start treating anybody that says anything slightly right wing as a messiah. And they're starting to even do it with liberals. I feel like it's out of desperation, because people want a savior instead of getting up. And you have to let go. I think people, and especially in America, I don't know if it's like that, like this across the world, but I feel like we're plagued with convenience. Nobody wants to give up conveniences to do something, which is why, as you know, whenever we had the mask mandates, I had stopped flying. I stopped wearing a rat mask. I'm not wearing one again. And I started driving everywhere. I literally drove 26 hours to Idaho. And hey, the work, I did it for a free show. They didn't even pay me.
Wow.
In Idaho, you know what I'm saying? And I drove back, and it was more difficult, obviously, because on a flight, I could have done all this in the course of 2 or 3 days,
yeah,
obviously. But it's what are you willing to sacrifice to get the results you want? And if you're not willing to sacrifice, well, then it's going to get worse, which unfortunately is what I'm saying.
How optimistic are you feeling about the USA?
In some ways, I feel like it's completely doomed, but in some ways, I feel like we can win. And the small reason why I feel like we can win is even if we take somebody like an Andrew Tate, right? I don't agree with everything Andrew Tate says, because I don't believe in just having sex with random women. I don't believe that's a good thing to push on you. But at the same time, a lot of things, if people listen to Andrew Tate, he probably doesn't even, I'm sure he does know it, he's a conservative. Like, in most ways, he's a clear-cut conservative.
Yeah.
And what I noticed about Andrew Tate, though, which made me intrigued by him, is that he was winning the battle of ideas. He was winning them.
That's why they had to get rid of him, man.
That's what I'm saying. Bro,
He's been back on Twitter for less than 2 days as we record this, and he's almost at 2 million followers.
Bro, this is what I'm saying. He was in the battle of ideas. He went against the top liberals you can think of, the biggest liberals. He got more views than them, more content than them, more likes than them, more podcast views than them, more anything than them. He won the battle of ideas in the culture war. Mm-hmm. So much so, they had to get him out of there, like you said. Boy, they called my boy to get banned off every single thing known to man. Like, he didn't even break no YouTube guidelines. They said, he gots to go. We gots to get up because he won.
Yeah.
And what Andrew Tate showed me is that we can win the culture. Our ideas are better. Our ideas are more liked because people are realizing it. But the sad part is I don't think a lot of, like, people on the right understand that. Even look at Kanye West. No matter how controversial Kanye West has gotten, if you look at the comments on Academic Shade Room, things of that nature, over 50% of the comments are still positive towards Kanye, no matter how controversial he got. Mm-hmm. And he announced he's running for president, and I was reading the comments. It's like me, I always look at what the culture is saying. Look at the comment section, and you got comments of people saying, I speak for all of us when we're all voting for him, right? Mm-hmm. And these are not politically inclined people. Kanye West, I haven't heard him say anything intelligent about political policy or anything, you know. But the mere fact that people are saying, I speak for all of us, that we all vote for him, and it gets 20,000 likes on that one comment, you know, that shows you something about culture wars. So when I see these things, it makes me optimistic, right? Like, it's like You see the little light at the tunnel. We can win. I see it. Hey, 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 we can win. You yell it from the rooftops. But then when you look at what we are doing as a people, even amongst conservatives, it's like, oh, dang, we don't see it. We don't understand it. We're not going to win. Because the majority of Americans don't care about politics, especially the 18 to 29 crowd. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so it's sort of pessimistic in that way. It's like a black pill. Like you see Andrew Tate, red pill, red pill, red pill. But you see... oh, can we capitalize on it? Do we even understand it? And it's a no. I mean, I go back to 2020, and I think, I don't know if you remember me saying this, why the crap was Donald J. Trump not on Twitch playing freaking Fortnite or Call of Duty? I don't understand it. This makes no sense. Who's on his team? Who came up with these marketing plans? I don't get it. And I started to see Matt Gaetz start to take advantage of it a little bit. You know what I'm saying? If he blow up, it'd be crazy. But, you know, Andrew Tate understood it. If we could just take that and run, but I don't know if we'll see it. So,
well, I think something that you deeply and fundamentally understand, and not just understand, but you act on, which most conservatives, I still don't think get. I think people are starting to get it more, but I still think people are really way behind the eight ball on this one, is understanding the importance of culture. So many people I talk to, I do lots of these, as you know, I speak at a lot of political events in the US primarily, but also in other places. But when I speak at them, I'm often the least political person in the room, right? Of course, I have my leanings, and sometimes I'll talk about politics. But if people pay attention to what I say, most of my content is not directly political. It's more social, cultural, psychological, talking about morality, talking about what's going on in the world. I'm rarely talking about the GOP or the Democrats or this person or that person or conservatives, Labor in the UK. I barely ever talk about that stuff because I recognize that it's the culture. It's what young people think is cool. What is it that they're listening to? What songs are trending? What's popping on TikTok? What are those big ideas? And I think that where the so-called left just trounces conservatives, if we're being honest, over the decades, is having such a deep understanding of that and a strategy and a plan. And conservatives are always just like, oh, we'll get them at the voting booth, right? We'll get them wait two more years, wait until the next 4 years. We're gonna vote in 2024. And I'm like, I'm not saying, yo, don't vote. All right. Vote according to your conscience for sure, if you're politically motivated, but you can't just ignore or sometimes it's not even ignore. It's outright attacking certain things. I mean, you're a rapper, right? We're both rappers. We know that a lot of conservatives still will just demonize hip hop. Not some of it. Not say, oh, okay, that particular artist or whatever. Just the whole genre, right? Rap is rap. Crap. The whole genre. Rappers crap. The whole genre is. And I'm just like, yo, even if it's not your favorite form of music, I think it's stupid. Right? I think it's stupid to condemn the entire thing, especially when now, which you didn't really have before. Before you didn't really have like conservative rappers per se, but now you do explicitly have conservative rappers. You certainly have non-woke rappers. You have people who are pushing stuff that does have a positive message. It's not full of profanity. It's making people think. Sometimes it's directly in line with ideas and ideals. And instead of going, you know what, actually, cool, we can create something that's and promote something and support something that's a counter to the degeneracy. Instead, it's just like, oh, well, let's push that to the side. I'm not saying everyone does this because, of course, we have people who support us. But I think that, I see inroads being made. I see what Daily Wire is doing. I see some of the stuff that PragerU is doing, moving into, you know, making programming for kids, you know, doing cartoons, doing more stuff, you know, with musicians or creatives and artists, moving into film. I think all that is really dope. And I'd love to see more of that in the future, because it's been so one-sided for our entire lifetime. It's been completely one-sided.
Bro, it's hard. And I push this all the time, and you know it, but it's so hard because when people like me and you push it, people think it's solely for our own benefit. And it's because they genuinely don't understand. The majority of conservatives, they don't understand culture. So they don't understand what we're saying. It's just true. You know, because you're in it. Like, perfect example, bro. You want to really get in the culture war, culture battle. think about this. When Let's Go Brandon hit the top 40 on Billboard, number 28 on Hot 100, I don't even think most conservatives understand how insane that truly is. You know what I'm saying? Like, people don't understand that their record labels put up millions of dollars for their artists to get in the top 40. Like, that's the success point. And if you get top 10, then you just blew it out the water. Mm-hmm. And Billboard did an article, and I tried to show people this article, right? And I even said something about the dude who made the other Let's Go Brandon that I can't stand. He's just the worst human alive. But I even said something about him. Billboard Charts did an article and said, this is crazy. Because it shocked them. Who the crap gets top 40 Billboard based on iTunes sales in 2022? This should be impossible. Mm-hmm. But they did an article and talked about how crazy. The entire Billboard staff did an entire article, bro, about Let's Go Brandon song. And they said, two songs, Let's Go Brandon top 40? What the crap is going on? How is this possible? And everybody was like, I'm confused. Everybody was confused, bro. But then towards the end, they was like, well, there's nothing for us to worry about because we think this is going to be short-lived. And they said, if this became a consistent thing, we should worry about it. But we know that it's going to be short-lived, so it's nothing to worry about. They were correct. It lasted for like 2 or 3 weeks. No conservative song has gotten that popular again since. And I try to scream this from the rooftops, and I'm like, y'all, if we continue, let's just say three conservative rappers, right? Zuby, Bryson Gray, and Tyson James. If us three could consistently get our projects, let's not even talk about songs. Let's talk about songs or albums to compete with the top artists, like once a month or something. Do you know how quick we would get in the conversation? I'm not saying culture would change because of that. I'm saying it'd get us in the conversation of the culture war. And we would get in play. We would get in the positions to change the culture at that point. People don't understand that's how simple something could be. Daily Wire, they go forward with the movies. And if we could get the Daily Wire movies or any conservative films to compete with the top films that come out, this is how simple it is to start the change of culture. And it can happen. You know, people think it happened over the course of 15, 20 years. Andrew Tate proved no, it can happen right now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But we don't understand it. And it's so mind boggling, bro. We put every ounce of energy we have in the political aspect of things. And like you said, not everybody, because we have a lot of people that follow us that support our music. For half a song even on a Billboard toss is crazy, but I'm saying that we just knew how simple it was, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that people need to, and this is not to look, anyone listening to this is already supporting us to some degree. So massive shout out to anyone who's even listening to this conversation. But I think overall people need to, because look, not everyone's a creator. Most people are not going to be creatives. Most people aren't going to make podcasts or make YouTube videos or make music or music videos and so on. But I think that people need to perhaps think a little more consciously, or I would suggest that people think more consciously about where they're putting their time, their attention, and their money. Because that's the economy that we now live in this era of streaming and YouTube views and social media and all that. You know, retweeting is free. Liking is free. Sharing a song is free. Streaming, even listening to the music, downloading the album is free. You can stream it, put it on repeat. If someone is out there doing something that you like, especially for the people who say, hey, you know what? I can't speak out because I've got this corporate job or whatever. Man, you know, back some people's Patreon, right? Yep. Subscribe to some people, throw them some. It's all a pre. And people are like, Zuby's grifting. I'm not grifting. I'm saying, yo, if you want people to create more of this, this stuff does take money. It takes money to make music. It takes money to market it. It takes money to create these movies, create these comedies, all these things that creators are doing. It has to be supported. And I think that people miss that, right? As soon as someone even wants to monetize something, people, you're grifting, or you're trying to do this. It gets frustrating because it's just like, man, do you want this to exist or not, right? Are you going to support the people who are at least trying to move the needle?
But Pete, though, the part that freaks me out is what they don't call grifting is when the GOP texts you every day to donate. I'm sick, bro. Think about this, right?
Yeah.
Donald Trump literally asks people for money all the time, and you support it because you think he's doing something important. I donated hundreds of dollars to Donald Trump. Maybe over 1,000. I don't really know how to check the records, but
man, you donated thousands more in promotion, that's for sure.
Oh, Tommy. And we added promotion of Donald Trump.
Whole albums, bro. Whole albums.
Bro, I got my entire family to vote for Trump. I got all my friends. But bro, I could give you 20 people for 100% fact that I know personally voted for Trump. And I know I inspired more people to vote for Trump. So we're going off that. It's a lot more. But even me personally, I done given at least almost $1,000 to Donald Trump campaign, right? I'm not saying don't do that. I'm just saying nobody calls it grifting because you think that's for the greater good. Culture is more important than politics. People may get mad by that, but it's the truth. These labels, Lil Nas X, Cardi B, how much money do y'all think they put into promoting WAP?
Millions.
Millions. I got a friend who had a song that went gold. It's a degenerate song. My friend Luke had a song I might be there with. No, I think it's platinum now. And the initial investment was $250,000.
Mm-hmm. For one song.
One song. This is a single.
Yep.
We don't need that to compete with them. Proof, let's go Brandon. But like Zuby said, a retweet, a like, a share. If you have Spotify, people like me and Zuby should have a million Spotify listeners. And I don't know, how many, have Daily Wire actually released a film yet?
Yeah, they've released a few films.
Like brand new ones?
Yeah, so, I mean, of course, they had the Matt Walsh documentary, What is a Woman?
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course.
Before that, they had a Run, Hide, Fight, and then Terror on the Prairie, the one with Gina Carano.
Okay. Those should be on the top of every chart if they're out somewhere. Or when they release a new one, the first week sales should be through the roof. Or the downloads or streams should be through the roof. Okay, if we want to compete with culture, it's going to take money. And y'all know it because y'all do it with politicians all the time. So I mean, this is just the reality of life, man.
Yeah, most def, man. Here's a question as well I wanted to ask, man, because you're another thing you're a staunch advocate for and you've been speaking out about a lot, especially over the past couple of weeks, is freedom of speech. So firstly, well, first question, what does that mean to you?
It means what the law says okay. It means.
Why do you think, let me not cut you off. You go ahead. Sorry.
No, I mean, obviously there's a few things it doesn't include and I feel like everybody already knows what it doesn't include. I mean, you can't, you know, you'll get punished if I said, Zuby, I'm going to murder you tonight. You know, so obviously, that's a threat. And the police will be at your door.
YouTube, don't pull that down. That was just like an example.
Yeah, it was an example. obviously. But outside of that, I mean, everything's under free speech. And by the way, porn isn't considered free speech, but that's a different topic legally. But yeah.
Gotcha. Why are you so passionate about it?
I'm passionate about it because that's the only way to have a fair battle of ideas. And it's the one genuine thing that can be fair. It doesn't have to be, nobody has to be favored in that. That's the one, like, that's the most genuine thing you can have is a conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the most genuine thing that can happen, bro. And unless somebody is breaking the law, there is no reason to hinder it. Like, because if you're hindering it, you're only going to mess it up for one side, and that's the harsh reality. And from a selfish reason, I need it because some countries, come on, man. Listen. I'll say what I want, but I'm very well aware that saying what I want to say comes with consequences on social media nowadays. Mm-hmm. And I want to continue saying what I want to say. So even on a selfish level, it's like, I need it, bro. Like, because I've been saying the same thing for years, and I refuse to bow and kneel. So I need it. It's a requirement for my entire existence.
I hear that totally, man. Here's a question. How does that fit in with your view of you didn't explicitly say theocracy, but a nation or a society that is more in line with biblical values and tradition? How do you see those things lining up? This sort of comes back to what I was saying about the balance between liberalism. I'd say true freedom of speech is a traditionally liberal value more than it is actually a traditionally, certainly more than it is a traditionally conservative one. But how would you square that with having a more traditionally religious society or even nation and still having true freedom of speech, which includes freedom to criticize religion, freedom to blaspheme, and so on and so forth. How do you see those things working together?
Easy. I separate things in my brain. So there's a difference between the theocracy utopia in Bryson land versus where we live in the United States of America. So the theocracy that I wish I have is not applicable in the United States of America. So what we have here is we've had something called freedom of speech in the Bill of Rights. That's something we've had since the earliest foundings of this country. And I just think that still needs to be applied. I believe the Constitution was meant to be the law of the land. Like, even if you have something different in your states, you had to abide by this right here, though. And so that's how I separated in my mind. You can criticize, you could do whatever, you can say whatever you want, because voice is not an action unless you call to action. Mm-hmm. So you should be able to have the conversations. Now in Bryson land, obviously, now we're talking about something different. In Bryson land, like I said, bro, I try to conflate things. So, you know, I feel like there's a debate amongst, you know, if weed recreationally should be legal in all states, right? But in Bryson land, it just flat out be illegal. So I just, you know, I don't conflate the two, because that's not reality. Mm-hmm. So in this country, we have freedom of speech, though. And I do think it's a conservative, I do think it's conservative because you're conserving the Bill of Rights. Something that was already there. It's not like freedom of speech is some new things. Now, it is true that historically conservatives were against allowing certain, you know, freedom of speech. That is true. But I'm saying, as far as an idea, I don't think that conserving the Bill of Rights is liberal. I actually think it would actually be conservative.
I got you. So, this might be a funny question. Is there a country out there, whether you've been there or not, but which you think resembles what you call Bryson land?
Because
a lot of what you say does, I mean, again, as someone who grew up in the Middle East, a lot of what you say does make me think, like, man, this sounds like Saudi Arabia.
It sounds like UAE. Listen, I'm not against, you know, I'm not against what they got going. Obviously, mine would be a little different because I'm not a Muslim, right? But, you know, like I said, man, I'm not against that idea. And the reason why, though, is because, you know, I told you this before, we had personal conversation, and you explained to me, like, the differences between, you know, Middle East and here, and you even said you like here better, right? But when you were talking, and a lot of stuff you were saying, I'm like, you know, you're convincing me.
Yo, I'll tell you what, man, I was in Dubai just a few weeks ago, and I've got a sister that lives there, who's lived there for years. Of course, I lived in Saudi Arabia for 20 years with my whole family. And when I was in Dubai recently, man, I was like, man, this is tempting. No, for real, bro. A lot of reasons too. You know, there's no income tax.
Yeah. You told me that last time. Yeah.
There's no income tax. Like, this degeneracy in the schools and whatever, like, you don't even worry about that. It's super safe, super, super safe, super, super clean. I was like, man, I might come back to the Middle East.
Listen, I was looking up, like, what it's like there, right? Like, is it safe? It's so funny because the Andrew Tate video popped up. And of course he was over exaggerating, yeah. But he was like, you can leave $100,000 sitting on top of a Lamborghini. I don't know if it was Saudi Arabia or Dubai, one of them. He said, you can leave it there, you can walk away and come back. He was like, it's gonna still be there.
Yeah.
He said, you do that anywhere in the United States of America, it is gone.
Gone, yeah.
And yeah. When he said it, I'm like, bro, safer. From what I've read and what I hear, you don't have the drug addiction problems, you don't have the homelessness problems like you have here. Like, a lot of the degeneracy problems you don't have here, like you said, you don't even worry about that. Some LGBT being pushed into schools, you don't even worry about crap like that. And I'm not saying these places are perfect, but once again, everything is a trade-off, right? I don't know this, but you live in Saudi Arabia and you got a sister living in Dubai. So I don't know this, but I don't believe citizens have the same economic opportunities as we have here. But I don't know that for sure.
The citizens, I'm probably not the best place person to, answer that. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm sure there's going to be some sacrifice from here to there that you have to make. Mm-hmm. But me personally, as a person who cares more about the social aspects of things, I care about economic economics also, but I care about the social aspect of things. I mean, these places just seem like a more, you know, attractive place. That's all I say, you know. So my, you know, Bryce Atlanta be sort of like, you know, these places that you're speaking of, maybe a little tweaks, but you know, something like that.
Yeah, I hear that, man. It's an interesting conversation because, man, there's so many. I've been to almost 40 countries at this point, and the trade-off point is really interesting because it's something I'm always trying to explain to people, because people are always looking for utopia, regardless of their beliefs. People are looking for this utopian city or state or town, country, and it's always trade-offs. What is good for one person? And another thing that's funny, and it's even funnier in this world where people like to talk about diversity and tolerance and so on. But it's also funny because I've noticed that people also will get mad at people for their preferences. So if I say anything positive about Dubai or Saudi, like, this, people want to jump down my throat and start yelling at me and calling me that. And I was like, wait, I thought we were allowed to have our, right? Like, I'm not saying you have to move there, right? Just like this thing going on in Qatar. That's why it's making me laugh, because people are acting like they're forced, like they were forced to go there and they were forced to wear a rainbow flag t-shirt to go to the game. It's like, number one, you didn't have to go to the country. If you've got huge issues with a country, if you're just like, you know what, I find their laws and their customs and traditions, I think it's backwards and I don't like it and I don't want to support it and support their economy, I'm like, cool, like, you don't have to go. But what I find weird is when someone wants to go there and then they also want to be, right? I don't know if you saw the thing where people were getting mad because they can't drink alcohol in the stadium.
Yep. I saw that people get angry at that
too. to watch a 2-hour game. I'm like, you can't just chill on the drinking for two and a half hours, right? Like, you're not in your country. You know, you're going into an Islamic country, right? But you still want to eat your bacon. You still want to, you know, drink your alcohol. To me, that's that kind of Western arrogance where I'm just like, man, like, that's...
Bro.
I'm like, dude, stop that.
People, like, it's funny, bro. I said this to you today. I think everybody just gangbangs on their side. Everybody, like, nobody really has true belief systems. Everybody just like their belief systems for whoever they like. And what I mean by that, like, you see me go through this, like, if you say anything positive about Islam as a Christian, you get attacked the same way.
Yes.
So people got mad at me because I said, yo, Allah is just a name for God.
That is correct.
That's really what it is. Mm-hmm. And Christians came down my throat, called me an Islam, a Muslim sympathizer. And I'm like, no, bro, the Christians there say Allah. What are you talking about, bro?
Yep.
And it's just this thing where you get attacked for anything, any belief system, bro. You get attacked, even if it's true. It's just everybody's just so emotional, bro. And it sort of drives me crazy. I try to look at everything from an objective standpoint, no matter what it is, even if me personally, I don't like it, I'd be like, okay, let me see what's going on. Even if I don't like somebody, I'd be like, okay, this was actually, like, people were mad at me because I told Elon Musk to restore Kathy Griffin. And I'm like, this doesn't mean I like Kathy Griffin, bro. Like, I'm not a liberal. I just thought he was doing a quick little temper tantrum. And I'm like, bro, just let the dumb girl back on. If you was going to kick her off, it should have been for her holding Trump's head, not this. And conservatives got mad at me. You know what I'm saying? And I mean, obviously now conservatives mad at me because I'm advocating that Alex Jones should have his account back. You know, I don't know, but there was no winning in this situation. You can't please everybody.
No, you really can't. And once you get past a certain number of followers, even attempting to, you it doesn't matter what you see, you can just breathe, right? You could tweet a smiley face and someone will get triggered and ask, bro, why, you know.
today I tweeted, you know, I try to report on the news. If I see something, I try to, you know, report about it. All I tweeted, bro, was Kanye plans to run for president in 2024. What are your thoughts? That's all I said. I kid you not. Somebody said, I think you need to take some time off Twitter and focus on yourself. And I said, I said, first off, what did I say? Then I said, secondly, I don't focus on myself. I always focus on God. Then there's like, well, I can't tell by this tweet. This tweet doesn't seem like you're focusing on God. And I said, I just reported about Kanye claiming to run for president in 2024. What did I even do wrong? So it's just like what's it getting said about the followers on Twitter, bro? It's like, it really doesn't matter what you post. Somebody's going to be upset at something, bro.
Yeah, what I think happens with Twitter and social media in general is there are some people, millions of people every day, who they're already mad, they're already triggered, they're already angry at life, and they don't necessarily know why, and they go and they scroll and they just find the first thing or the first person that like triggers this emotional thing, and they just go at you, right? It might not have anything to do with what you said. It's not even related to what, like, they're just like, I just need to get this out. I just got this thing. I want to get, and you just pop up. Your face just pops up, and they're like, okay, hit reply. And they just write something, and I'm looking at it like, what does this have to do with what? Like, why is this person so angry? I look at my tweet. Sometimes I have to go back and check what I wrote. I'm like, wait, did I write what I thought I wrote? Because this seems like a real big jump that's not warranted based on what I said.
At all. I'm convinced, bro, and I know like a lot of my tweets can be polarizing. I'm just convinced people don't even read the tweets all the way. I'm convinced that sometimes, for real, bro, I think sometimes people don't like the person. Well, they probably read like the beginning of the tweet and like, okay, I've heard enough. And then they'll just start, and then they'll just start responding to your tweet. And then, you know, the funniest thing to me is like, sometimes I respond. I don't respond to everybody because it's impossible. But I just like, I'm a psychology freak, right? So I like seeing like, how would this person respond to this question after saying what they say? So a lot of times I'll respond to specific certain people if I think what they said is so crazy. Like if I think what you said is so like, I don't know, not disrespectful, but sometimes I'm like, if it's so stupid, what you said, I'm like so intrigued to respond to you because I want to understand how you would handle the conversation, right? And when you do it, bro, people just go further off the tracks, bro, further off the tracks. And it's just like, I didn't even say this. Like somebody said, Bryson is a DeSantis simp because I've because something happened with Trump and DeSantis. I'm like, bro, I've never ever said I like DeSantis. Matter of fact, anybody has been following me long enough, no, I'm not even a fan of DeSantis. But if you say one thing positive, it's so crazy how polarizing it is, bro. If you say one thing positive about DeSantis, you like DeSantis. If you say one thing negative about Trump, you're a never Trumper. It's the most weirdest thing you have to experience, bro. But it just shows you how crazy people are.
Mm. Have you started getting controlled opposition?
Oh yeah, I've been getting that.
Okay.
Ever since
people like that one right now.
I've been called that ever since last week. I thought, no disrespect, like when Trump explained why he said what he said to DeSantis, I thought the reasoning was just incredibly silly. He said that DeSantis didn't answer a question the way he wanted it answered. So he came out and attacked him. I'm like, that just sounds crazy. And the problem with Twitter, I think deep down people know stuff is stupid. So what they do is they'll create a whole new theory outside of what the person said. So, you know, with Trump, they're like, no, Trump did it because it's a deeper reasoning why he did it. So I'm like, He just said this though. Like I watched him say this on True Social. Like I'm on True Social. I follow him. My boy told you why he said it about DeSantis. And someone said, no, that's not why. And I'm like, what? You know, and it's just like, and ever since then, people have been calling me a controlled opposition. You're a traitor. You're a grifter. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I get called the same things that the left calls me.
Yep.
It's so weird, bro.
Yeah. Do you know what I actually think has happened? And it was happening before this, but I genuinely think that the past 2.5 years, the whole so-called pandemic situation and the response to it, I genuinely think that it broke a lot of people's brains.
That's possible.
I honestly think that the damage that was done to people's sanity and mental well-being, I'm talking across billions of people, I think it's genuinely had an impact because I see a difference even now, like between say 2019 and now, just in the way people's like emotions and ability to like the logic and there's something that's been disrupted. I don't know if people just spent too long isolated. And I think another thing that happened is because we got lied to so much, whatever country you're in, right? Every single day they're lying to you on the media. They're lying to you every single day over 700 days straight. They're lying to you, right? You can't trust anyone. You can't trust any of the experts, any of the officials, any of the, you know, the so-called science. They're just lying and gaslighting you for 700 days straight. Some people literally stayed in their home. They didn't travel. They didn't leave. They weren't seeing their friends. All the things that normally keep us sane, it was taken away from some people. You know, there's people who, you know, kept moving, kept doing stuff. Hundreds of millions of people did not. Like, they just stayed rooted in that spot. And they're just there on Twitter, on YouTube, on things. And I think that because they got so used to being lied to all the time, maybe, now it's almost like they don't think they can. I've noticed people are like, people on the right, not all of them, but a lot of people on the right have become extraordinarily paranoid.
Oh,
like super paranoid to the point where like, everything is 4D or 5D chess and nothing can be taken at face value. And everything you're saying has a double meaning or a hidden symbol, or you're like, I don't know, I scratch my chin in the interview and I'm doing some Illuminati symbol now. And I wasn't getting that in 2019. Now I'm like, yo, I think this thing has really affected people's psychology. I think a lot of the people who more on the left side of the aisle, they got their brains broken in another way, right? Just the fear, right? Sheer fear, fear, fear. But I think on the right, like, people became super paranoid. And now everyone is, you can't trust anyone. You can't trust anything. And I think it's still playing out.
I think that is the most unique but most accurate theory I've heard. And I'm going to tell you why. I say this every time I go live on Instagram. I have to repeat this because people always bring up crazy stuff. It was not like this, bro, when I first got into this movement. People were not like this. The stuff, none of this stuff was like this, but it was like a totally different movement, and it has been freaking me out, and I cannot figure it out. I'm like, bro, what the crap is going on? I haven't been able to figure it out, bro. And it's interesting because you're right. Before COVID, it just genuinely wasn't like this. People would say, followers of Trump is a cult. And I used to argue against it. I said no, because people criticize people like we're not a cult at all. And then now it's like people have actually created lists of people that have like turned on Trump or something, and everything is 5D chess and everything is a theory. We're getting paid by this person or this person. Yeah. Like, bro, the Illuminati stuff. Somebody told me in one of my, bro, on my God Wins album, right? It's a blue background. And I shot this in a living room with my lights that I bought. Like, it's so interesting. And somebody said, because this side of my face was more covered and you could barely see my eye right here, it's like, it's a Mason thing or whatever, Illuminati thing. And I'm like, bro, I did that in my living room. Like, what are you talking about? I released two albums that year. One was red, another was blue. So I thought I was doing something so cool. And now you just like ruined my entire vibe. And I, bro, like, I think you're right. I think the last 2.5 years, people have become extremely paranoid and their brains have been broken.
Yeah, I'm really, really seeing that. I think the amount of damage that's been done is psychologically, I think it's been really underestimated. And yeah, man, I've had it's been weird for me over this year, because in the past few months, like the past 6 months, all of a sudden, you know, back before it was, Zuby's funded by the GOP, or people said I was funded by the Trump administration, or I was funded by the Tories in the UK, or this. But this was like all coming from lefties. But now I'm getting people like more on the right who are like, oh, Zuby's a controlled op, or he's a Zionist shill, or he's a Illuminati, or he's a Freemason. I'm a Freemason now, apparently. Just out of nowhere. And it's weird. And people will say things like, oh, you know, my brand color is purple, right?
Yeah.
Has been for more than 10 years. And now people, he uses purple because purple is the color of deception. And, I'll be sitting like that or something, or just like resting my hands, and they're like, oh, look at that photo. Look, we've got this photo. His hands are in this position. So this and this. There's one where from behind the scenes on a music video, I was shooting the music video for Real, where I was wearing my suit, and I was talking to the director across the room, and he was like, you ready to go? And I was like, yeah, man, I'm ready to go. Like, all good, right? Okay, I'm all good. That photo. People are like, explain yourself.
Oh my, this is him.
And I'm like, or you know, in the Devil May Cry music video, I go, we all know Hollywood is satanic, but there's no wickedness on my team. And I do that intentionally, and people freeze frame the video and they're like, explain yourself. I'm like, did you listen to the song? Right? I'm criticizing. I'm like,
you're literally doing it to call out the people that they're claiming you are. Like, what?
Bro, it's wild.
Bro, it is so crazy. I got a dude that sent me some stuff yesterday, bro. Let me see. I could probably pull it up right now, bro. This dude sent me some stuff, broski, and he got pictures. Like, he sent me pictures of me and said, when are you going to admit what you are, or something like that? But I'm like, man, y'all are insane, bro. I got too many DMs, but I can't. I'm not even going to try. But, all good, man. But he sent it to me. He sent me a picture with me and Tommy Vex that we took at his video shoot. And they're like, look how your hand, because you know, in all my pictures, I do this.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It doesn't matter what picture I do this. And they said that is like some type of Mason thing now. And I'm like, what? I'm like, bro, how? Like, what are you talking about? But I took a picture with the Proud Boys, and you know what the Proud Boys sign is. And And they said that was a Mason. I'm like, no, they're doing it a troll. Bro, people have lost their absolute minds, bro. And you might be right, because during COVID, I was traveling all the time. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that saved me, but bro, it is nuts, bro.
Yeah, it's wild, bro. But what have you got in plans creatively, man? You've been, but dude, before anything, man, let me say congratulations, dude, because in the past 2 years, I've been in both quiet and vocal admiration of your freaking work rate, dude. I don't even know how many freaking albums you've dropped since our last interview, but it's like 5 or 6, and I don't know, 20, 30 singles. Like you've been going hard. And as a fellow independent artist, I know it's freaking hard and you're making it look easy. So congrats, man. Like I've seen you hitting Billboard. I've seen you, man, just, you know, doing shows, growing your audience, getting tons of listeners on Spotify, the success of Let's Go Brandon, all these other songs, man. It's genuinely inspiring. So
thank you, bro.
I believe in giving people their flowers and showing props when it's due. So congrats on that.
Thank you, bro. Hey, you already know, congrats to you, bro. You got an M on Twitter. I saw you grow up on Instagram, your YouTube going crazy. I'd be like, bro, that is inspiring, bro. So same to you, bro. But as far as work rate, bro, I was talking to me and Tyson was talking, I think like after Let's Go Brandon stuff had died down, which I knew it was going to do. And I was gearing up to release my album, Us Versus the Industry. And I told him, I was like, after this, I might not drop any albums. I might just drop a single every Friday. And the reason why is because, for one, when I was talking to my boy Tyson, I'm like, we have to work harder than them. That's how I view it. Because we don't have the funds they have. We don't have the backing they have. Even with the conservative movement, I know my music is like more controversial than a lot of other people. So unless it's something like Let's Go Brandon that blow up on its own first, I'm not going to get the support from like mainstream conservatives all the time. So I feel like I have to work extra, extra hard to do it. And I'm built for it. I've been making music all my life. I have an album, a secular album with 150 songs on it, all produced by me. So I don't even produce all my music anymore. So now this is like, honestly, the easiest thing ever. And because I just like making music. So I was like, you know, after this album, I'm going to just release a song every Friday.
How do you get stuff out there? So to get stuff out there, I assume you self-record. Do you have a studio at home?
Yeah, my studio is like right in front of me. Like the camera right here and behind it is my studio.
Okay.
So it's just easy to have my own camera, even though the camera broke recently. I bought a red camera, like a $7,000 camera, and it just recently broke, and I had to get a new one. So that's gonna be tough. We're still shooting with it because it don't look bad because it's a red camera, but it's like it's not the same. Yeah, bro. So after my last album, Us Versus the Industry, the last album, I only released one album this year, which is Us Versus the Industry, and it was in January. My best selling album. And I started releasing singles every day. It's a
dope
album,
by the way, man.
Thank you, bro. And when I started listening to songs every Friday, me and Tyson started doing it together. It grew everything. Everything started growing. The videos were getting at least 20,000 views in one day. It was amazing. Like everything, like it was like great. And then in June, we decided to do like a theme in June, an anti-LGBT theme in June.
Brandon. You had to, Bryson. You had to.
You know what I'm saying? I had to. And that was probably like it killed it, right? Because the views were crazy. But YouTube suspended like two of my videos that month, a live stream. Like I've been sitting on two strikes, bro, since June, and I haven't been able to just get all of them off. And because every time I try to get one off, something else happens. And bro, ever since then, me and Tyson, our views have gone like down. You know what I'm saying? Like ever since them two strikes, like everything has been going just like it's like YouTube. So like you know how YouTube do. I mean, you can say it's our fault because we like went against the guidelines twice. So YouTube, like we're not sending their stuff out anymore. And I still release music every Friday because it's like you just never know. And you know, I grind, bro, but you know, it's not the same. And then, like, the only place I'm not shadow banned or banned on right now is Twitter. Because the way Twitter works is, like, different. And Twitter hasn't shadow banned me in a while. That's why I post my full music videos on Twitter now, because it's, like, it's only – I had to because there's no – you know what I'm saying? But, yeah, Friday I'm releasing an album. I released the album in January, and now I'm releasing an album sort of, you know, the end of November, the beginning of the year, end of the year. Okay. It's called Lion Music. I'm listening to this Friday. And it's more Christ-centered, but Hunter Biden hacked on there, which made Billboard. FBI raid on there made Billboard. I'm still grinding, bro. I feel like we have to work, you know. And what you know, it's funny. The first song on there is called Angel Time. And the reason why is because, you know, a lot of rappers now like to say they're on Demon Time. You know what I'm saying? It's like they're proud to say I'm on Demon Time. And, you know, I said, you know, I'm going to say something. I'm going to say the opposite. So I made a song called Angel Time. And that's like my whole vibe, bro. It's like I want to work harder than Satan. And it may not work. It may work like how I want it to work, but I'm going to try anyway. So that's what that's about.
I hear that, bro. Where can people follow you online?
I mean, you can follow me everywhere. I'm on Twitter. Obviously, I'm on Twitter, Real Bryson Gray, True Social, Real Bryson Gray, Parler, Real Bryson Gray. And then my YouTube is Bryson Gray. And Instagram is Bryson Creates. And, you know, people can follow me on those platforms. And, you know, it's the best way to find me.
Awesome, bro. Always appreciate hearing your perspective, man.
Yo, thank you so much, bro. You too, bro. Next time you're in Nashville or something, hit me up, bro.
Of course, man. Always.
Yes, sir. God bless you, man.
God bless, bro. Peace.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang. Y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.